Okay. On the phone line, I have a guest that was on a few weeks ago, mystery suspense writer Richard Godwin. Richard, good morning.
Hi, Armand. How are you?
Very well, very well. It's great to have you here again. And the reason why you're back so soon is that you interviewed a mutual friend and also a former guest on Cafe Ali, as well as In the Moment. And I interviewed her in the Moment on WBAI also. C.E. Lawrence, and you've done an interview with her, right?
That's right, yes, and thanks for having me back. Yep. If you want to read the interview, it's on my website, which is richardgodwin.net.
Mm-hmm.
Click on the blog button, and you'll go to The Slaughterhouse, which is the name of my blog. I do these interviews, which I call the Chinwags at the Slaughterhouse, with a number of different writers. And C. Lawrence is up now. She is live now. And we had a great time. In fact, you know, we spoke about a lot of things. She's a very accomplished author, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
A really, really nice woman. And we spoke about German literature. We spoke about her forthcoming novel, Silent Kills, which sounds fascinating. And we got into some interesting kind of questions and answers. Among them, I asked her whether she thought surveillance has become more prevalent in Western society and whether really it's changed crime at all. I have my own doubts about that. I mean, in London, we have more CCTV cameras per person than anywhere else virtually in the world.
Mm.
But I don't see crime changing because of it.
Yeah, New York was talking about emulating that model in London and in England.
Yes, exactly. I mean, we're very much like living with Big Brother, but, you know, I don't really think it's doing an awful lot, apart from perhaps with some burglaries to deter crime. We got into some, you know, really interesting areas. It's a good interview. She's, as you know, she's a great writer.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully we'll be seeing an awful lot more of her. We also spoke about Russian literature, paranoia and mental illness, how it affects crime.
Yes, yes.
One of the things we got into, which is interesting as a crime writer, was the control of the body by the state, and how killers, you know, try and control their victims' bodies. And we were looking at analogies between those two areas.
Hmm.
She spoke about her love for Conan Doyle and Dostoevsky and what got her into crime writing. And she was getting some good comments. Among them, I noticed you on there, which is nice to see you at my blog.
Well, I had to chime in. And she even, you guys even mentioned the Long Island murders that are going on. Because she and I have spoken about that.
Well, we're reading about them. I mean, I have... less information than you do, because I have limited time to sort of scour the news. But, mm-hmm. I mean, what's the latest with that?
Well, actually, what has happened is they just found a body in Amagansett, which is quite a few miles, maybe 90, 100 miles east of the Gilgo Beach and, you know, the Jones Beach area bodies that have been found. And they're actually attributing these murders to three or four different murderers now.
Mm.
And what I was saying to C.E. Lawrence was that it's a dumping ground over there for, you know, multiple people. And if they really start looking, and I've heard this rumors over the years about, you know, people dumping people over there by the water, you know. So I think that's basically what they're finding, is that there's one man that was found. They say it was a separate incident. And then they have the three or four so-called call girls they found that's attributed to one murder. Then there was a woman and a child, a baby, that was found also. So, and they believe this one in Amagansett is different, but they're all, the thing that they have in common is that they're all, remnants found on the South Shore. So, I had heard some mention of a couple of, police officers, I believe a week and a half ago, that were being looked at, for these. But I don't, you know, again, there was a rumor that it was somebody in law enforcement because of the way they handled it. But, of course, it's not fair to, you know, to pick out any one group and single it out until all the evidence is in.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, the fact that they're saying or attributing it to different people, is that because there are different signatures, or they don't know? They're kind of guessing here.
Well, we don't know what they know. I think that's another part of it, and they're leaking out little things at a time. Not leaking, I should say. They're feeding us little bits of information, and I think to a large degree they want to antagonize whoever it is, and yet not create any kind of mass hysteria, because that is an important economic driver in the region. Of course, you don't want, and the thing that oddly enough, you know, we used to party at a place called the OBI in the area there, and the escapades, dare I say, that occurred at that place, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if people OD'd and just passed out and nobody ever knew about it, you know?
The geography lends itself to a highly motivated killer.
Yeah. Well, the other thing about it is that everybody I know that I've spoken to, that, you know, the local people from the area have known that you could drive through the any time and see a car parked on the side of the road, and you don't know what's going on. It's like an accepted thing to see a car sitting on the grass next to the marsh, you know, and you don't know if it's somebody that's going fishing. And I used to commute on Ocean Parkway, and coming back from work, I could come home from work at midnight. I could do a gig and come back from Long Beach or something, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and you see a car sitting on the side of the road. And, you know, people, no questions asked. You don't know what's going on or what's been happening. So it's a very, the area it loans itself at night. And again, were you going to put cameras in the marshland?
Yeah, you can't do that. It's true. It's sounds as though the police are trying to tap the water and see which way the fish jump. You don't really know what they think. But equally, there are so many cases like this where it's very hard to find out who's behind it. I mean, if water's involved, I mean, I remember reading how the Italian mafia, one of their favorite methods was, if they wanted to get rid of someone, they'd say, listen, come for a party on my yacht here in the middle of the ocean, and suddenly, you know, you're shark bait. You're never going to be found. So it's obviously in the reality of it, it's a horrific and extremely grueling situation. It's also interesting from a writer's perspective in terms of what the detective work behind this may or may not be, and I guess that really depends on how competent the leading police officer is, and you only read about that years later. And you get this situation where the killer is playing a game as well, you know, that they know how much they can get away with. I've read very limited amounts about this, and C. Lawrence actually alerted me to it, but I hadn't heard about it until she sent me a notification of it in an email. But how many months has it been going on now?
Well, I think it's come to the public's attention since they were looking for one of the girls named Shannon Gilbert, who still hasn't been found. They were looking over there and found all these other people.
Right.
But they've been looking for Shannon Gilbert since last fall, maybe late summer, you know, or fall. And she's been missing since about a year or so. And
and are the victims all women?
No, that's the thing. There was one man found. And actually, the one in Amagansett, they don't notice the sexes. So the body is so decomposed, as of yet, to determine what the sex of the cadaver was. You know, and that might not be connected. Or it might be. We don't know.
it's a strange one. I mean, how do you think people in that area feeling about it? How is that affecting people on the ground?
Well, it's a good diversion from the problems that we're having, as far as all of our jobs and our taxes and prices going up and how much of a beating we're getting. We're talking about these murders, and I find it odd that I know that these things have been going on all of the time, and now there's a focus on it.
Right.
It's, you know, certain people disappear all the time, and it seems that, you know, it's focused on at certain times, and other times it's not.
Yeah.
And without getting, you know, political and all that, I'm just going to say it's odd that at this time that we're facing such difficulty in, runaway taxes and everything, and, you know, how many of these politicians are robbing us and involved with all kinds of scandals and everything, and all of a sudden we have a story to take our mind off. It's like a diversion. Now all of a sudden Palestine pops up again. The same stuff has been going on for 60 years, I'm sorry, and now all of a sudden it's a story again. and we're getting, you know, over here we're getting beat on a daily basis. You know, we're more concerned about these other stories that are popping up, but from your perspective, this is your field of endeavor as far as writing.
Well, yes, it is. I mean, but equally, I totally agree with you about media manipulation, you know, and the way that we're kind of treated like kids, you know, go and look at the candy over there. I think you're completely right, because there isn't real transparency of information. I mean, we're still in a recession in London, whatever the politicians say, whatever they want to do to talk it up. And there's definitely diversionary tactics being used all the time to lead us away from what is actually going on. I was just looking at the situation. If a business had been run the way the UK has been run in recent years, it would have gone bankrupt. Certain people are not brought to account, but they have an awful lot of power and they have an awful lot of influence. And unfortunately, those people have people in their pockets who own newspapers and can control the media and can put things out there that will distract you from other events, if you like. And you're right, obviously this does need to be covered. But people do disappear all the time.
There are families who are out there wondering how come their child or their family member's story isn't moving as much resources, you know, and concern. And that's a whole nother story. But you know what I'm going to ask you about right now is how Apostle Rising is doing. As a manipulation of the media right now.
It's doing well. It's doing well in a hard market. Some people have said to me, who've been in the business for years, it's one of the hardest times to bring out a debut novel. Basically, the high street in the UK is as gloomy as it was a while ago in the US with our leading chain Waterstones, which is like Barnes & Noble, almost kind of going under, but just now being rescued by a Russian oligarch. It's selling. It's getting some good reviews. It's also selling in the States. And two foreign publishers in Hungary and Spain are interested in buying foreign rights for it, which is extremely good news. And the sales are going on strong, a lot of them on Amazon. A lot of them are from the distributor in the U.S., which is Atlas Books. So I'm fairly positive in that it's going against the tide at the moment, because bringing out anything right now is really, really hard because of the recession.
Yes.
Publishers are, you know, cautious. Booksellers, book buyers are cautious. And if you think about a book, you're only going to buy one copy. It's not like you're going to go to the supermarket and find a butter that you love, and you might buy that butter for a year. You're going to buy one copy, unless you're buying one for your wife's birthday or something, and you want her to have a copy as well. So I'm fairly positive, and it's getting some really, really good reviews from some nice magazines and some other authors. I hope that if things shift a little bit and the bookselling industry picks up a bit, sales will definitely increase. If the foreign rights are bought, that is definitely good news. And I may well also be bringing out another novel of mine as an ebook in the near future. Other thing which is putting a lot of pressure on paperbacks, because it's out of the paperback at the moment.
So you're saying that would be read on one of those devices?
Exactly. Well, the ebook has soared, so people are buying less, fewer paperbacks, and Apostle Rising is only available as a paperback at the moment. But it may be put onto Kindle, and I have another novel which may be coming out on Kindle. But it is doing well, and people seem to enjoy it. And there's definite media manipulation in there, because basically the police get together with an offender profiler who does pretty much what you were talking about just now, tries to play games with the killer via the press. And this killer is targeting politicians. He's destroying politicians and he's killing them. And I've had some good things said about it. I'll be interested to see if C. Lawrence reads it, what she thinks of it. It's my first effort. But thank you for asking. I'm fairly happy at the moment with the way things are progressing.
So now I'm going to jump back again. Now your website, the Chin Wags at the Slaughterhouse. What? Explain that name to me, please.
Well, it's funny. It came to me on a morning run. I go for a jog every morning, and I've been thinking, this was a couple of years ago, about something I could do for other authors that would be a little bit different and fun. And that name just popped into my head on a run.
Mm-hmm.
Wags at the Slaughterhouse. And I thought, that's it. I'm going to have these interviews. I'm a crime writer, so I'll call my blog The Slaughterhouse. And I've interviewed an awful lot of people, and they are really popular because my questions are different. And I try and always get into that individual character that I'm talking to.
Mm-hmm.
I never have a list of questions up front. I just kind of fire off one, and then I move sideways. And they're popular, and they get a lot of traffic. People like reading them, and the authors are always really happy afterwards. I'll interview musicians, artists, photographers, you name it. They're a good way of meeting people, too, via the Internet.
Yes, yes. I did notice that... I was really impressed with the, as far as somebody, even a student, because you're referencing literature.
Right.
And the depth of the conversation, it was excellent. And the perspective, it took you to, it wasn't just a fluff interview, I really appreciated the introspect.
Mm-hmm.
And having spoken with C.E. Lawrence, I was aware of her background, and it took it to another level of depth. And I said, well, gee, why didn't I ask her that question? why didn't, we get into that portion of the discussion? And I really appreciate your introspect and the questions and where you guys went with the discussion. That was really great.
Thanks a lot. It's I appreciate that. It's a kind of process. I mean, I kind of try and take two questions to tune into a writer, and some of them I know beforehand and some of them I don't. And then, mm-hmm. There are clues there, and if you run with those, you can get a great interview. And it's a really good read, and it tells you a lot about her, tells you a lot about what C.E. Lawrence is about, what motivates her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really impassioned. You can hear how passionate she is about writing.
And it helps that she's an extremely articulate and knowledgeable individual also.
Yeah, she is, absolutely.
She's captivating, and her gift should be available to more of... I've told her she should be doing a radio show because she's so knowledgeable, in her teaching and all her activities with the plays and music. And I met her in an environment where she sang with my band.
Really?
So she's really a Renaissance person.
That's amazing. Incredibly.
My band was playing at a wedding, and they said, one of the family of the, somebody in the wedding party wants to sing the song, one of the songs, I forget, it was a couple of years ago, and it was her, and that's how I met her.
Interesting. And what was the style of the music that she was singing with you there?
Oh gosh, I don't remember. I'm trying to think if it was like a Tom Waits song.
Right. What a great songwriter.
I'm trying to remember. I think it was a Tom Waits song. This is a little while ago. So you got my memory going.
I love Tom Waits. I saw him in London when the tickets only cost £10 on Frank's Wild Years tour.
Wow.
And I've seen a load of concerts, but there are a number of people who stand out with real, real charisma.
Yes.
And, you know, they're not just going through a routine, and that was, but I saw it both nights running. It was absolutely amazing. I think the guy's a complete genius. I really do. And, mentioning music also, thank you for playing the Gil Scott-Heron just now.
I got, you know what, before we get to the top of the hour, let me let you do your parting thought, and I'm going to play one more from Gil Scott, and then we're going to go to a break at the top of the hour.
Okay, that's great. Well, parting thought. it's hard to say. Well, I suppose I'm thinking Gil Scott-Heron. Of course, the people didn't know about him is he wrote some novels. He wrote The Vulture. He took a year out to do that.
You know, I didn't know he wrote.
And, he's a very talented guy with a lot of strong convictions.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose the parting thought is this. I mean, will the e-book destroy the paperback? Or are people still going to want to take a book with them? Is it more physical? You're lying on a beach. Would you want sand kicked in your Kindle? And is it easier to get sand kicked into your paperback? But let's hope people don't stop reading. And
Well, I'll compare it to this.
No.
Huh?
Sorry, yes.
I'll compare it to this. CDs still sell, not as much as they used to.
Right.
But the MP3 hasn't killed the CD yet. Yet.
That's true. What about vinyl, though? Do you still have vinyl?
Well, you know, I walked out of the house and forgot I have turntables here, and I think audiophiles are still into vinyl.
Well, I've got a stack of vinyl, and I do still listen to them on mm-hmm. a sprung deck, because I think with certain sounds, there's more warmth to the music.
Mm. Well, they absolutely. That's the... the opinion, the industry opinion. Richard Garwin, thank you for visiting Cafe Ali.
Thank you very much, Emma, for having me again.
It's been a great friendship. Give your website out.
Yeah, please, yeah, richardgodwin.net.
Richard, here's that Gil Scott-Heron for you.
All right, thanks a lot, Emma.
Thank you.